Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now happening on our website, your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010, as the official census takers make their rounds from now through the summer to collect those 10 question forms. We are collecting your stories of change in our communities over the last decade. We have a separate page for each county in our listening area. Again, we have a separate page on our site for each county in our listening area for your stories of change in your community over the last 10 years. This week, we're focusing especially on Bergen County. We want all our Bergen County listeners to add something today about how your community has changed, because we'll be talking about Bergen on the air tomorrow. Again, we want all our Bergen County listeners to add something today to our webpage about how your community has changed over the last decade, demographically, politically, whatever. But wherever you're from in our area, we have a page for your county. So join us in creating your anecdotal census, a people's history of the New York City area from 2000 to 2010. And if you're from Bergen County, we really want you to do it today, because we'll talk about it on the air tomorrow. Go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. Thanks a lot for joining in. Right now, we'll talk about a very interesting and very important disagreement that has broken out over the last few days, with implications for the direction of science and for your health. On Thursday, a presidential panel on cancer, actually earlier last week, a presidential panel on cancer issued a comprehensive and controversial assessment of the environmental causes of the high rates of cancer in the United States. Usually about 6% of all cancers, only 6%, are attributed to toxic exposures. And most of those are concentrated workplace exposures. Just 2% of cancers are usually attributed to consumer exposures. But the presidential panel concluded that that must be grossly underestimated. One reason is that the cause of so many cancers is unknown, and only a few hundred of the 80,000 chemicals in commercial use today have ever been tested to see if they are carcinogenic. In addition to tobacco products, the report called on individuals to carefully limit our exposure to pesticides in food, X-rays and other medical imaging, motor vehicle exhaust, and too much sun. And very interesting to me, it called on the government to reverse the burden of proof for having new chemicals go on the market in consumer products. Currently, anything that is not tested or not proven harmful can go on the market. The panel wants manufacturers to prove new chemicals are safe before they can be unleashed. Now, we should note that the President's Cancer Panel has been in existence since Congress created it during the Nixon administration. The only two presidential appointees on the panel right now were appointed by President Bush. And yet, the American Cancer Society made headlines last week for issuing an opinion that the presidential panel overstated its case about cancer and the environment. We will make clear now what the Cancer Society objected to, and also where they agree with the presidential panel and think it's important. We are very happy to have with us Dr. Margaret Kripke, who co-authored the President's Cancer Panel report. And in a few minutes, we will also be joined by the American Cancer Society scientist who criticized the report. Dr. Kripke, who again was appointed by President Bush, is a Ph.D. immunologist and chief academic officer at the Anderson Cancer Center at the University of Texas. Dr. Kripke, thanks so much for coming on WNYC. Hello from New York.
Good morning, and thank you very much.
And first, to the point of your disagreement with the American Cancer Society, why did your panel conclude that the percentage of cancers caused by environmental exposures has been grossly underestimated?
Well, the figure of 6% actually comes from a study published originally in 1981, so it's somewhat out of date, and a lot of things have happened in the last 30 years. For example, as you mentioned, there are now 80,000 chemicals available on the market, very few of which have actually been tested for cancer-causing abilities. Also, the report, the initial figures, don't consider the effect of multiple exposures over someone's lifetime to many cancer-causing agents, and they don't take into consideration new research about how genes interact with the environment to produce cancer. Let me give you a specific example. If you have a genetic predisposition to developing lung cancer from tobacco use, and you also live in an area of high air pollution, you may get lung cancer, but that lung cancer will be attributed to smoking and not to an environmental contribution of air pollution. So I think there's new information out there that suggests that, first of all, we really don't know how many cancers are caused by environmental influences, but we believe, based on the testimony that we heard, that the 6% figure is really an underestimate.
Do you have a number? If conventional wisdom is that 2% of cancers are caused by consumer exposure, another 4% by workplace exposure, do you have a best guess at a more accurate number?
No, and the reason for that is that this has not really been examined for a very long time, and there's been very little research done in the past few years to look at this issue. And so our report calls for looking at this issue in depth, doing a reanalysis of workplace contaminants for chemicals that are cancer-causing, and for looking at the whole national strategy for dealing with chemical contaminants as in the environment.
Also joining us now is Dr. Michael Thune, an epidemiologist with the American Cancer Society. Epidemiology, in case you don't know, is the study of disease in populations as opposed to the study of disease in individuals. Dr. Thune, thanks so much for coming on WNYC, and I presume you know Dr. Kripke from the Presidential Cancer Panel.
And I have great respect for her.
And let's talk about this disagreement, and then I promise to also let you both say what you agree on from the report, because that is just as important for the fight against cancer. But Dr. Thune, you don't think the figure of 2% or 6% grossly underestimates the percentage of cancers that come from exposure to environmental carcinogens after hearing what Dr. Kripke just said?
So I would have preferred to start with the things that we agree on, because actually the American Cancer Society published a report in November, a perspective on environmental factors in cancer, and many of the recommendations that Congress needs to consider carefully as it reconsiders the Toxic Substances Control Act agree in the two reports. But let's start with the points of disagreement. What caught our attention first, and I should say that one disagrees with great trepidation with any report that has such an imposing source, and also that disagreeing with environmental claims always puts one at risk of being cast as a defender of pollution and in the pocket of industry. But what caught our attention first was the statement you pointed out that the, quote, true burden of cancer, environmentally induced cancer, was grossly underestimated. So if that statement were true, and it is a rather limited definition of environment that the report uses, it would revolutionize current scientific thinking about cancer prevention. But the reality is that it is a hypothesis that's been argued for about 30 years. The proponents are a very small group of activists, and there have been thousands of studies of this issue. In fact, I looked in PubMed to pull the numbers, and there's a tremendous literature on this issue.
And the PubMed is a database of medical journal articles and things like that, right?
And although it's very clear that chemicals cause cancer and radiation cause cancer, et cetera, there's no evidence that the levels of exposure that to pollutants that most Americans experience is causing more cancer than the current estimates. And I'd like to emphasize, I'm talking about the level of exposure. I'm not talking about the potential of chemicals and radiation to cause cancer. And I think it's important that the report doesn't give any evidence to support this claim. The overview, again, makes the assertion, but there's no evidence, to back it up.
Dr. Thune, what about the astonishing failure to test most of the 80,000 chemicals currently on the market? All but several hundred is the number that I've seen out of 80,000 in all kinds of products, and the fact that cancer rates have been going up during our lifetimes, even though cancer death rates have been going down.
Okay, so first of all, the point about the huge backlog of testing that compounds that haven't been adequately tested, that's one of the points of agreement. We think that's an extremely important thing, and we think that the need to develop and integrate high-throughput screening to test these and then integrate this with regulatory processes is a very important thing. And your second point is that cancer rates have been going up. Actually, cancer incidence rates have been decreasing for the past 5 years, and a lot of the increase that occurred was the tobacco epidemic, and underlying it is also the obesity epidemic. But let me come back to the issue of the difference between a hypothesis and evidence. Hypotheses are really important in moving knowledge forward. But when you're trying to solve a problem, it's really important to differentiate a hypothesis from evidence.
So let me get a response to that, because Dr. Kripke, you can't just assert as a fact that the percentage of environmental cancers is grossly underestimated rather than as a hypothesis without a large number of new studies that could prove or disprove the point, can you?
Yes. However, we state very clearly in the report that it is really not known how much of the environment is contributing to cancer incidence. And I think that's really the point, and I think probably Dr. Thune would agree with that. We don't have very good figures, and the figures that we do have are outdated, and much has happened in the interim. So it was our conclusion. It is our conclusion. It is not a scientifically proven fact, but it was our conclusion based on the testimony of many experts that the figure of 6% is likely to be very underestimated.
Dr. Thune, if I understand correctly, the American Cancer Society prefers to emphasize lifestyle causes, smoking, poor nutrition, obesity, and lack of exercise. And I think a lot of listeners may be surprised by that, because we usually think, certainly not surprised by smoking, but we usually think of obesity and lack of exercise as big risk factors for heart disease and diabetes. Most people wouldn't, I don't think, associate them with cancer. What cancers, and how do we know?
Oh, so for obesity, the biggest cancer would be breast cancer after menopause, colorectal cancer, there's endometrial cancer, there's adenocarcinoma of the lower esophagus. There's a list that of about six that are considered definite, and another six that are considered accumulating evidence. And I want to take issue with the concept of lifestyle, because I think that my other concern about this report is that it trivializes the sort of major efforts in cancer prevention that have been going on and have made huge progress with respect to smoking, in the statement that cancer prevention efforts have focused narrowly on smoking, other lifestyle behaviors, and chemo preventive interventions. So first of all, with respect to smoking, which is still 30% of all cancer deaths, the reduction in cigarette sales in the United States since the 1964 Surgeon General's report is the greatest public health achievement in the prevention of chronic disease in the last half century, and this isn't mentioned. Nor does it mention the causal relationship of obesity to many types of cancer. And to call obesity a lifestyle choice completely misrepresents the dynamic of changes in the social, physical, and economic environment that give us an abundance of cheap calories and almost no involuntary physical activity. And the report also doesn't mention chronic infections, which has been a huge area of progress. We have vaccines against human papillomavirus. We know that internationally, chronic infections account for about 18% of all cancers. So I think that the idea that this is a report on cancer prevention isn't lived up to by the omission of really major aspects.
So we have about 3 minutes left. What else do the two of you agree on that the public really needs to know, either at a personal choice level or at a policy level? Dr. Kripke?
Could I respond to that? I want to point out that in 2007, the President's Cancer Panel did an entire report on smoking and nutrition and obesity as major causes of cancer. And so the panel picks a specific subject each year to look at, and this year's specific subject happened to be environmental causes of cancer. So I think we agree absolutely on the fact that smoking is probably the biggest contributor to cancer incidence that we know about.
What about flipping the burden of proof onto manufacturers for showing new chemicals are safe before they hit the market in consumer goods or pesticides or whatever? Dr. Toon, do you agree with that proposal?
Well, I think that's a political decision. I think that you can make a strong case for it, but I think it's a political decision.
And Dr. Kripke, your report also calls for better assessment of people's exposure histories when they get cancer. And I wanted to touch on this because I think that's a very good idea. Like most Americans, I've known my share of people who have gotten sick or died from cancer, and I hardly ever hear people broach the topic of what might have caused it, unless they were smokers or used to be asbestos workers. Other than that, where it came from seems to almost never be asked. Is that your impression?
Yes, and one of our recommendations is that healthcare personnel, when they're taking medical histories, should include something about workplace exposures and exposures in the environment.
Why do we ignore medical histories in the case of cancer, Dr. Toon? Is it just too insensitive to talk about? I mean, it doesn't matter once somebody has the cancer to that individual, but it matters to others.
Yeah, well, you got to understand that what doctors have about 10 minutes with each patient, and the things they don't talk about are much greater than the things they do talk about. But I want to change the topic to what's really important, which is the issue of the upcoming reform of the Toxic Substances Control Act. Because where we agree is that it's a big problem that chemical pollutants accumulate in us and in the food chain, that there's this huge backlog of chemicals that haven't been tested adequately, that there's this whole developmental process for high-throughput screening, that exposure to ionizing radiation from medical imaging, such as CT tests, the issue of greater susceptibility of children, at least to toxic effects. It's not really so established for cancer. And then the issue of chemicals at low doses and combinations and estrogen-mimicking hormones, all of those are really important. And they're important for Congress to address, but they're not. The consideration of that is not really helped by making unproven assertions.
Dr. Kripke, we have 20 seconds for a last word. 20 seconds, really.
Well, I think that people need to know that there are some steps that they can take to protect themselves from things in their environment, and our report details those, not only what governments can do, but also what individuals can do.
Dr. Margaret Kripke, who co-authored the President's Cancer Panel Report, she was appointed originally by President Bush, re-upped by President Obama last year. And Dr. Michael Toon, an epidemiologist with the American Cancer Society. Thank you both very much for having some of this important dialogue on the air. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.